This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, episode 108, was recorded on June 8th, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. I'll tell you how to claim a free copy of their new guide to the best investing books ever written at the end of this episode. Joining me this week is Forest for the Trees founder Luke Grohman. Luke, it's great to have you back. What has been on your mind these days in these crazy markets?
Hey, Eric, thanks again for having me on. It's great to be here. You know, I was looking back at my notes the last time we talked. It was on March 23rd, which, as it turned out, was at least the intermediate or the near-term low in stocks. And on that episode, I said a couple things that I think are critical for context from here. And so I just wanted to take a moment to re-highlight them. And one of the things we said was quote, remember, as we've highlighted on Macro Voices numerous times, this crisis started with equity markets at 160% of GDP. We've cited IRS data noting that net capital gains plus taxable IRA distributions are around 200% of annual personal consumption expenditures, which is about 65% of GDP. And what all this means in plain English is that the stock market effectively is the economy. So if the Fed just lets stocks fall toward cash, the economy should fall toward cash, and the economy backs the treasury market and by extension, the dollar. And so the punchline in this that we said at the time is there effectively is no U.S. economy without the stock market consistently setting new highs. And this also ties into my last point of context, which is another point we've made repeatedly, that we're in the first global sovereign debt bubble in nearly 100 years, and there's only two ways out, default or inflation. So if stocks go towards cash, global sovereigns will likely begin nominally defaulting on their treasury debt, including the U.S. on treasuries, if the Fed doesn't print every dollar that's needed. And we said then, this in turn tells us that central banks are likely going to be extraordinarily aggressive. We had long thought they would eventually buy everything in sight. And this morning, as of March 23rd, we're seeing early signs of that. And I find many market participants still don't believe how big this could get or how long it will last, mainly because they're not factoring in the context that the stock market effectively is the U.S. economy. So if the stock market crashes, treasuries and global sovereign debt more broadly mathematically cannot be made nominally money good without massive amounts of Fed money printing. So that was sort of what we said on March 23rd.
Well, Luke, I got to hand it to you because I remember you saying that, and I remember thinking to myself, you know, even the Fed can't print their way out of this one. And boy, look at what's happened. The Fed has been extraordinarily aggressive and accommodative, and markets have responded. So do you think, I mean, we're going to continue? Are we headed to all-time highs in stocks or what?
You know, I don't think they have a choice not to continue. Something we didn't talk about back on March 23rd, but it's something we've written extensively about the client since, is what I think is a critical piece of context about what happened to the treasury market in particular between March 9th and March 18th of 2020. So shortly before we came on the show, and that is that after equities sold off sharply from February 19th to March 9th, if I recall correctly, that was a period of just 12 trading days. Something really unprecedented happened after that, which was that the U.S. Treasury market began crashing alongside equities between March 9th and March 18th. And we know this caught the Fed's attention because in their March 15th meeting minutes, the Fed said that the U.S. Treasury market, quote, ceased to function effectively, end quote. And that then ties into a second point I made on March 23rd on the show, which is this. You know, the euro dollar market was effectively an infinitely levered dollar short. So as Brent Johnson has correctly noted multiple times, as the dollar rises, it creates this giant short squeeze higher on the dollar, especially given the massive amounts of dollar denominated debt outstanding. However, a critical difference this time versus really any other cycle in history has been that the U.S.'s net international investment position, or NIIP, is about negative 50 to 55% of GDP, which is by far the most negative it's ever been going into a recession. And What this means in plain English is that foreigners own about $12 trillion more in dollar assets than we own of their assets. And foreigners in total own about $40 trillion of dollar assets gross, on a gross basis. And you know, this is just a natural outcome of the U.S. running a $300 to $400 billion per year deficit against China over the last 20 years. And we've also run deficits with Japan and Germany and other creditors. So when these nations start suffering from dollar shortages, start to get squeezed, you know, guess what they do to raise dollar cash? They start selling their $40 trillion in dollar-denominated assets, and they don't stop until either the Fed prints enough or stocks go to cash value near zero or the system collapses. And with that as sort of the background, you know, what we've learned since March, I think, has been three or four really important new things. And the first I would say is that, you know, the dollar index or the DXY going to just 102 was enough to begin a tidal wave of selling of those $40 trillion in foreign-held dollar assets as foreigners sold dollar assets to raise dollars. The second thing that I think we learned that's really important is that it only took 12 trading days of aggressive selling of dollar assets for the Treasury market to, quote, cease to function effectively, end quote, as the Fed called it in their meeting minutes from March 15th. The third thing I think we've learned since March is that in the Fed's eyes, you know, the U.S. dollar up and the risk-off trade is all fun and games until the U.S. Treasury market loses an eye, so to speak. And then, as we saw, the Fed gets very aggressive very quickly. And I think the last thing that we've learned since March is that, judging by what's happened to the stock market since, you know, we learned that at least in the near term, the Fed growing their balance sheet by about $3 trillion over a little over 2 months, which is roughly a $20 trillion annual rate, is the answer to the question, how much Fed balance sheet expansion is enough?
Okay, Luke, so it was enough. Now, when you say it was enough, does that mean that they're done? Do you think they're going to keep doing this? I mean, we are seeing that the Fed seems to be tapering its balance sheet expansion pretty dramatically now, hopefully showing some restraint, or is this just the first wave?
It's a great question, Eric, and that I think it's one of, if not the key questions. And the answer is that here, at least as we see it, the answer is that here it gets a little trickier in terms of trying to figure out what's actually happened. Because like you said, on the surface, the Fed is dramatically tapering its Treasury purchases. So at the end of March, early April, it was $75 billion a day. It's down to $4 billion per day now, which is interesting that $4 billion a day is still nearly $100 billion a month, which is still a really big number if we'd have backed up just 3 or 4 months and talked about a number like that. But I think it's important to look at your question from three angles. So the first is what is the Fed said about it? The second is what the Fed did in April. And then I think the third important question is, or angle to look at, is the geopolitical context in which all of this is happening. And so on the first point, Fed Chair Jay Powell told us in late April, the Fed was focused on making sure that markets, quote unquote, function, and that they would act, quote, forcefully, aggressively, and proactively, end quote, to make sure markets function. And he added further that, quote, the Fed won't run out of money. And so we know that if equity markets sell off aggressively, the Fed's likely not going to wait around to see how things play out, given that Treasury markets ceased to function effectively after just 12 days of equity selling back in March. So the second thing in terms of thinking about your question and as how we're thinking about it is that if we go back to April, the Fed did something else other than the balance sheet expansion that has received significantly less press than the balance sheet growth. And that is that they quote unquote temporarily suspended supplementary liquidity ratio or SLR rules as they relate solely to treasuries. And so I'm going to read one quick part of the release that the Fed put out on April 14th, and I quote, "In light of recent disruptions in economic conditions caused by the coronavirus disease and current strains in U.S. financial markets, the Federal Reserve Board is issuing an interim final rule that revises on a temporary basis for bank holding companies, savings and loan holding companies, and U.S. intermediate holding companies of foreign banking organizations, the calculation of total leverage exposure, the denominator of the supplementary leverage ratio in the board's capital rule, to exclude the on-balance sheet amounts of U.S. Treasury securities and deposits at Federal Reserve banks." And so in plain English, the Fed suspended the SLR rules temporarily to remove the SLR constraints from bank balance sheets as they relate to treasuries, which allows banks to go from providing credit to the U.S. government or U.S. households and businesses to providing credit to the U.S. government and households and businesses. And that's how the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee, the TBAC, referred to it. And that subtle but critical change from or to and strikes us as likely to be, you know, quite bullish for gold, gold miners, and risk assets over time, because to us it represents a structural increase in dollar liquidity supplied to U.S. markets. And so when you think about what the Fed did there in terms of changing the regulations, it brings up the questions, well, how many treasuries could banks buy? And I think an interesting context or framework for thinking about that question is, if we look back to World War II, the U.S. banking system's holdings of treasuries represented over 50% of the banking system's total assets. And this is based on a report the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee put out a few weeks ago. Today, treasuries represent just about 5% of total assets. And this is why I said calculating the impact of the Fed tapering its purchases of treasuries, I think, is a bit tricky, because if the Fed stops buying as many treasuries, but the banking system, which is backed by the Fed, can now buy treasuries with essentially unlimited leverage thanks to the Fed SLR rule change, then the Fed can taper purchases on one hand while banks ramp them up, and we could still see a net gain in dollar liquidity. And, you know, given this, it's been interesting to me to see the dollar drop over the past few weeks the way it has, even with the Fed tapering. And that's why I say it's a little bit tricky. And then that brings us to the third angle in terms of what we highlighted, which is the geopolitical angle. The U.S. government recently openly stated in a public report on China that was titled "The U.S. Strategic Approach to the People's Republic of China," that the U.S. is now engaged in what the U.S. government called in this report a great power competition with China, which I think is important that the U.S. actually finally overtly stated it, because as we've noted over and over and over, foreigners are not buying nearly enough treasuries anymore to finance this great power competition for us. And so either the Fed and U.S. banks buy whatever treasuries are needed, or the U.S. loses this great power competition before it ever really gets going. And our view is that the U.S. is not going to lose the competition for lack of dollars. And so essentially what's now accelerating is what we've called, to borrow a phrase from the TBAC, wartime finance. And we've long told clients that we thought where this movie was going was that the U.S. was going to be forced to finance itself like the U.S. did during World War II, which was the Fed and U.S. banks buy every treasury that's needed at politically expedient rates, and, you know, otherwise known as negative real rates, until the U.S. government's great power competition versus China, and as an aside, it's quote-unquote war versus COVID, are over.
Okay, Luke, how do we translate all of this perspective into market positioning? How are you positioned for this?
I think you just want to own assets that benefit from fiat currency debasement. So I think gold and gold miners are right at the top of that list. I think equities do well. And I think you want to be underweight assets that lose from fiat currency debasement, and bonds, of course, but especially treasuries and other sovereign debts. And given how important equities are to U.S. consumer spending, and therefore GDP growth and U.S. government tax receipts, I think it's important that the U.S. government cannot hope to win this great power competition with China unless two conditions are satisfied in markets, which is, number one, equities rise, basically ad infinitum or until the great power competition's over, and two, treasuries have negative real rates for the foreseeable future or until the dollar's weakened pretty meaningfully. And just given the political economy likelihood, in our view, that policy will be implemented to achieve these two outcomes, and I think that's not speculation on our part. We've just seen it play out in real time in March, April, and May. As a result of that, our favorite assets remain gold miners, but we also think it probably plays really well for silver and Bitcoin as well. And then, like I said, I think equities will do well, especially against bonds. And within equities, we still like industrials and also like big tech under the theme of data being the new oil, particularly as it relates to big tech being a critical sector in the U.S. government's newly declared great power competition with China. So, like I said, you basically want to own assets that do well during fiat currency debasement. And now, ultimately, I think they'll all debase. And given the structure of the euro dollar system, the U.S. will eventually have to debase the most. But the question is, who will debase the fastest? And that I don't know. And that's why we remain positioned as we are in terms of being so favorable on gold and gold miners, is because I don't need to get the order of their debasement right. The gold does well no matter what.
Luke, thanks so much for another terrific interview. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast on quant and rules-based investing. Be sure to claim your free copy of their recently updated guide to the best investing books ever written at TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro guide. And if you haven't heard it yet, be sure to check out my full-length interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on trend following strategies, which is linked in your Research Roundup email. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.